Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
We're going to be chanting this verse shown on the board up here. We'll chant responsively. Now we'll chant together. Let's chant together.
Dharmak projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam Vidyam vastavam atravastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni krite kimba parayar ishvaraha Sadya hridyo avarudya tetra kritibi shushru shulis tachanat.
Translation? Where's the... Oh, okay, good. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. It's not that before you do all these nice things, Super Saul went out for lunch. He's there in the heart of every living being, but one becomes conscious. Goodness. That child's been screaming since he was downstairs and came in the door. Material world is an uncomfortable place. During this holiday weekend, in the association of the devotees here, we've been absorbing ourselves in the invocation verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. And we spent a lot of hours together and we're halfway through the second verse. In other words, the substance of what these invocation verses are presenting, the substance is enormous. And it's very inspiring also. So what I wanted to do this evening is just read a few paragraphs directly from the purport and then discuss the ideas that are presented there. In the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada presents two things, so just summarize that. He speaks of the distinction between animal society and human society, and the distinction is, in human society, there's some type of dharma or religion eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, regulating those things in such a way that they gradually elevate one towards God, that's human function. Minus that, it's animal life. Two-legged animals, four-legged animals, animal life. So human life begins with the acceptance of regulation of these animal propensities towards God consciousness. Then he describes that in the lower stage of civilization, the principle that's motivating people is sense gratification. And in competition for sense gratification, then there's enmity. And between one another, there's envy and enmity because the program is sense gratification. Unregulated and even regulated sense gratification. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam wishes to take one above that platform. The statement is that it will take, the reader will be taken to that position, the transcendental position, beyond the regulatory type of dharma to the transcendental type of dharma, making a distinction here between, same as Krishna makes in Bhagavad Gita, the 1866 verse of Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityajya, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. So, the essence is that one. Surrender to Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna, Paradharma, transcendental, not just regulation of animal propensities, but transcendental Dharma, the Dharma of the soul, he writes like that. Now I'm going to read. In the Vedas, the above mentioned four activities, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, are prescribed in the regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation, but the devotees of the Lord rise above such competition. This is for those of you that go to work every day. They do not compete with the materialist because they are on the path back to Godhead where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. You still go to work. But they work for Krishna, not the other kind. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore, there is competition. But the transcendental devotee of the Lord, devotees of the Lord, are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone. And they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. The contemporary socialists' conception of a competitionless society is artificial because in the socialist state there's competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the common basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. Oh, that's... I'm going to read two more paragraphs, but I'll just stop there for a moment. Besides appreciating the beautiful way that Srila Prabhupada uses language, please bear in mind that when he was writing the Srimad Bhagavatam purport, his vision was he had been given a command or an assignment by his spiritual master to take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking parts of the world. He had never been to the English-speaking parts of the world. He described that some of his godbrothers, sannyasis, very senior sannyasis in the Gaudiya Math, had been sent to go to England to take, following the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which was following the vision of Lord Chaitanya, that the message of Lord Chaitanya should be heard all over the world. So they went to London. And they came back with the report that to bring the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking parts of the world, they said, impossible. Because to receive the teachings, one has to have some qualification. And even the foundational qualification of following regulative principles of life, when told what the regulative principles of life are, one man who had been part of the British government system during the British rule was now living in England, and he had appreciation. He had some cultural wish that he could become a qualified Vaishnava. And when he was asked, can I become a qualified Vaishnava? Can I become a Vaishnava Brahmin? He said, yes. Follow these principles. And his answer was, impossible. Because their life is made of those irregulative, sinful activities. It's their bread and butter. It's their cup of tea. It's their breath of air. They can't live without it. So Prabhupada said, "I when I came to America, I thought when I told people this is the standard, they'd say, go back to India." Several times he spoke like that. He had that impression that that's how he would be received. So when he's in the Radhadamara temple in Vrindavan, writing this first canto Bhagavatam, he knows what his audience is. It's Western people, because that's the assignment, take these teachings and give to the English-speaking parts of the world. And what's going to be the receptivity? Impossible. Go back to India. That's his audience. And what do they know about the Bhagavatam and Lord Chaitanya and Vedic culture? Zippo. Nothing. So it's a totally fresh, new, not necessarily so receptive audience. And that was his audience. And he's now writing the purport to explain how to go beyond illusion into the realm of transcendental reality. So, of course, he was empowered and directly inspired by Krishna from within his heart. And he's very faithful to the previous acharyas and their explanations of these things. that the message doesn't change because the audience is the Western audience. He has to present the same message, but in a form that can be understood and readily received by that audience. So he's presenting an essential part of, can something be done with this nice little child that doesn't understand what's going on here? Are the parents of this child here? Thank you very much. He's cute. That's a plus. He's noisy. That's a minus. So, the principle of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha is being presented. Religiosity for the purpose of, or motivated by, gaining piety, motivated by, with that piety, to get sense gratification, to fit the opulences needed for sense gratification in this life and the next, and ultimately for some who realize the futility of that program, liberation. So he's making the statement that this Bhagavatam goes beyond that. He writes, the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the absolute truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the absolute truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalist literature and higher than the Jnana Kanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karma Kanda division and even higher than the Upasana Kanda division. Did you know that? Commonly we hear there are these three, Jnana Kanda, Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasanakanda. The Bhagavatam is transcendental literature that's, because Upasana means worship, and he speaks of it here in the purport of worship of demigods. Because commonly, within those who are followers of the Vedas, they're worshippers of demigods. Demigods is the multiple controllers of the universe in order to receive some particular benediction. I worship this particular devata, and another benediction, another particular devata, and I worship many devatas because I have many wants. And that's called Hinduism. And the Bhagavatam is transcendental literature, or monotheism. And there's one supreme God. There's not just God, there's one absolute truth from which everything comes, including the demigods and the powers of the demigods and the universe and everyone's ability to do anything. To digest your food, to walk across the floor, to sing, to dance, to breathe, to live, to think, to whatever it is that one can do, the ability comes from the absolute truth. He's the source of everything. That's the focus of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that absolute truth is a person, supreme person. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of these because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. What does that mean? The substance or the root of all categories. In the verse up here, we discussed this morning, vastu. Vedyam Vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. Vastu, because we'll be discussing this a little bit again tomorrow, but vastu in this case means the primordial supreme, the absolute truth, that substance. Vastu means substance or stuff or substance. So what comes from substance is something else. It's not substance, it's the emanation from substance, it's category. Something that I learned in my freshman philosophy class, I'll just share with you now. It comes from Socrates. It's the same idea. He, by philosophy, uses very similar terms, and the title of the essay is The Realm of the Absolutes. Something like that. And he uses, like, very long, wordy, protracted thing about chair. So here's a chair. And we commonly think of the chair as substance or substantial. After all, here I am sitting in the chair. It's here. It's substantial. Then he asks the question, where did the chair come from? And he says, before there was a chair, there was an idea of a chair. Then a whole thing about before there's anything, there's an idea of that something. And then that something comes into being. You know, even man created things. Here's a table before the table. Why this particular kind of table? Someone had an idea. This is a useful table. So here's the table. But before that is the idea of a table. And where, before there was the idea of the table, where did the idea of a table come from? And he reasons, it's not a proof, but it's a reasoning that there's a realm where tables exist eternally. There's a realm of the absolutes where there's tables and there's chairs and there's stuff. But it's eternal stuff. It's not the idea of stuff or the temporary manifestation, because here's a table, but what was it before it was a table? Besides it was an idea, it was a tree. And what was it before it was a tree? It was the earth. And what was it before it was the earth? It was probably another something that decomposed and became earth, and trace it back and back. And where does it come from? It comes from an absolute realm. By reasoning, he reasons that there is a realm where things are absolute. There's personality, there's form, there's quality, there's tables, there's chairs, there's stuff. And that primordial stuff this verse is speaking about, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu, it's an understanding of, the Bhagavatam gives us understanding of not just how to regulate your senses so that you can enjoy nice, mode of goodness, enjoyment, and get some upgrades in the next existence in the heavenly realm and have even more enjoyment. But it's not that kind of literature. It's literature about vastu, about the primordial substance from which chairs come and tables come in. So that's just category. And some things fit into that category. Table. Now it's a table. And in some time going into the future, it's going to be ashes and carbon dioxide and water vapor. It's not going to be table anymore. So going that direction of time and that direction of time, it's not table. So temporarily it's table. It's a category. But what's the real substance? The real substance is the Supreme Absolute Truth, from whom the energies come to make, by permutations and combinations, different temporary things. So what is it that's behind these temporary things? This verse is saying. The Bhagavatam gives that understanding. Now why would... Is that just a philosophical, head-scratching, chin-pulling... Is it like an idea, a notional exercise? Or is it something that assists us how to live our life in a quality way? Let's read on. Nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. This conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates this simultaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadyasya Sutra. That was another paragraph. So a little bit of time on Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Those who are practicing devotees, you know what it is. Those that are kind of newer, I'll explain it slowly. And it goes like this. As is the topic of this invocation verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is an absolute truth. What does that mean? There is a source from which everything else comes. Matter, spirit, you name it. There's a source. That source is the absolute truth. So because there's a source from which everything comes, everything has its relationship with the source. There's a relationship of oneness, of things, with the source of those things. Just like there is the sun and there's sunshine, and the shine of the sun is inseparable from the sun. Have you ever seen a sun without shine? Or you ever seen shine without a sun? No such thing. I've got an extra ray of sun in my pocket here. But you can't separate the sun from... You can't break off a ray and put it in your pocket, walk down the street with it. It's inseparable. Similarly, the energy that comes from the source of all energies, whether it's the material creation or the spiritual realm, there's an inseparable relationship between the source of emanation and the energies that come from the source. So that's one aspect, that's the non-different aspect. Then there's a difference. So the rays are different than the sun, but the rays are inseparable from the sun. The two are together. One and different. So you can say that about the oneness and difference aspect about anything. You can say it about us as spirit souls. Qualitatively, we're one with the Supreme. Quantitatively, we're different from the Supreme. We're an energy and he's the energetic. There's a difference. But there's a oneness aspect also. We're conscious and he's supremely conscious. So qualitatively, we're one. Quantitatively, and existentially, we're different. But there's a oneness and there's a difference aspect between all things and the source of emanation. This philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is the basis, is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the basis of the relationship of all things with God, the source of emanation. So now the next paragraph. This knowledge that The energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish, quote, the energy is the absolute. That's, and for those of you from India, that's Shakti worshippers, where the energy is the supreme. And they worship Shakti in various features and forms, but the notion is the energy is supreme. And the Bhagavatam is saying, while the energy is inseparable from the supreme, it's not the source. The source is Shaktiman, and that which comes from the source is Shakti, and Shakti is under the direction of Shaktiman. Both it comes from that source, and the energy acts under the indication of the source. The will of the Supreme directs his energy, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. Adyaksha means he oversees, he superintends, he gives direction to Prakriti. And as he gives direction, Prakriti moves or doesn't move according to his direction. So the energy is not supreme, nor is the energy absolute. It's not, energy is not independent of the energetic. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. Development of this transcendental consciousness grounded in this conception of simultaneously one and different leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. And then he describes what the threefold miseries are. Miseries of adhyatmika, body and mind. Adhidaivika, miseries of disturbances within nature. And adhibhautika, disturbances caused by other living entities. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the surrender of the devotee unto the Absolute Person. That's where it starts. The devotee is fully aware that he is one with the Absolute and at the same time in the eternal position of servant of the Absolute. In the material conception, one falsely thinks himself the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled by the threefold miseries of life. So, that's like backwards and forwards. We're in a difficult circumstance because of a rebellious spirit towards the Supreme. And the trouble comes in the form of threefold miseries. And the remedy for the threefold miseries is to let go of that rebellious spirit and instead take a agreeable spirit, a submissive, happy spirit to the Supreme and become the servant of the Supreme. Take our proper position of prakriti, para-prakriti, we're prakriti, we're energy of the Supreme Lord meant to be enjoyed by the enjoyer, the Purusha. We're Prakriti, he's Purusha. We accept that position and serve him, and we become happy. And the tapatraya, the threefold miseries of material existence, become uprooted. Permanently, that is to say, no more birth and death, no more continuing in the cycle of samsara. Purnarjanma navidyate. Just by, exactly as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chakvadeham purnar janma naiti mameti sorjana. By properly understanding Krishna, his position, his janma, and his lila, by properly understanding Krishna, you get a one-way ticket. to the spiritual world. No visa required, no passport required, just get on board and go back to Godhead. Just from this one thing. But the one thing requires some qualification that's been explained. Satam. Paramo nirmatsaranam satam. One has to become purified. Purified specifically, nirmatsaranam satam. 100% purified. And then one can fully understand that which is otherwise covered and concealed and not accessible to us. Covered by Maya. It's not that the sun becomes covered by a cloud. We say like that. The sun is covered by the cloud, or now it's covered by darkness. The sun is not covered by darkness or a cloud. The sun is always shining. But our condition is something may be obfuscating or blocking our vision to the sun. So we can't see. But the sun is always shining. So to get to the position where we're in conscious contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, that's this nirmatsaranam satam. One has to become free from this contamination of envy of the Supreme. Instead, taking shelter of our position of service to Him. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching, and the very, very attractive teachings and presentation given by Vyasadeva in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to carry us from the contaminated state to the purified state just by regular hearing. See, so what if one is presently contaminated? Go on hearing. Hear carefully. Hear attentively. And hear regularly. And we've all of us, I'm sure, have had the experience. Progressively, as our Krishna consciousness matures, as we become further purified, things that we didn't understand before somehow become understandable. It's something like, Prabhupada gives this comparison, the rising of the sun in the morning. Supposing you're in your room at night and the light's out and the shade's down and it's like the room is dark. You can't see anything. You try to get up and walk around the room, you could bang your knee against a table or desk or chair or whatever it is because you can't see anything because it's dark. And then, slowly, the sun starts to rise and you can start to make out, oh, there's where the table is, there's where the chair is. But it's just kind of faint and dim, but it's something. Then gradually, things become more discernible. In the philosophical language of commentators, they use these terms, pots and plates, to indicate, like, objects. When the light of the Absolute is there, then one can see the pots and the plates. You can see things of this world properly. And without the light of the Absolute, you can't see anything. You can say all kinds of things, but it's not knowledge. It's not it's illusion. So the Bhagavatam is asking us to turn on that one light, the Absolute Truth light, that illumines everything. And then we can realize ourselves, we can realize the pots and the plates and the stuff of this world properly. It properly means in their relationship with the source of emanation, and then we can interact with those pots and plates and things in such a way it's liberating for the soul. It's very pleasing to the soul. It's pleasing to other souls. It's not in this envious, competitive spirit. There is a relationship between all things with the source of emanation. There's a oneness and difference relationship. With that understanding, tapatrayon mulanam, the unnecessary and unwanted miseries of material existence become eradicated in a very natural way. So that's what this second verse is describing, and we'll continue again tomorrow morning. More detailed description. Okay, so any comments or questions from this verse or what we've been discussing over the weekend, the holiday? They want you to speak a little louder. You can do it. I've heard you.
So this tapatraya unmulanam, it's also progressive. Like even
yes, we, yes, it's progressive.
So sometimes even if the devotee is fully committed, still he may be suffering.
Yes, he may be suffering. Do you know one? Keep going.
So, I mean, how do we understand? Because
you answered your question. It's progressive. Proportionate to our submission and surrender, that misery is lifted. That's how we understand. There's a light switch in this room. They have a name for it. It's called the rocker arm. I learned this. On and off, two positions. There's another kind of light switch. It's called the dimmer switch. Like that. So, proportionate to one submission unto the personality of Godhead, tapatrayon mulanam. That's how you understand it.
Devotee may be still physically suffering.
Sure. Now let's stop for a moment and ask the question, what's the difference between reality and illusion? Difficult question, right? Reality is in relation to the soul, that which is eternal, or sat. That's reality. And asat is temporary. So everything that's temporary is asat. So now with that definition, what's misery? Real misery is forgetfulness of who we are and forgetfulness of our relationship with the Supreme. That's misery. That's the root. And the other is reflection of the root. Stay tuned for tomorrow morning class. We're going to discuss this some more. You going to be here? It's Saturday morning. You'll be here. Stay tuned. We're going to discuss this more tomorrow. It's a reality and illusion discussion. But the short is, real misery is to forget our relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example of the fish out of water. Take a fish out of water. It's misery. You can give him all kinds of amenities. Give him a nice color TV. Give him the latest new computer and technology gadget and, you know, sunglasses and an umbrella so he's like not baking in the sun. And a nice hammock and, you know, nice cool breeze. He's miserable because he's not in water. Put him back in water and he's happy. Similarly, misery is not just, I've got a pain in my knee. I got a pain in my knee. I can tell you about it, but I got a pain in my knee. So I'm sitting in a chair. But is that what misery is? I got a pain in my knee? Or I'm getting old, and I'm going to die, and have to take birth again. And even those things, birth, death, disease, and old age, those are the problems. But the problems are dissolved by taking shelter of Krishna. Tapatrayon mulanam. Proportionate to my surrender to Krishna, I'll understand the pain in my knee and the getting old and dying. It's part of the message that says, I made a mistake. I should have turned left instead of right. And I made a wrong turn somewhere. And here I am in the world of forgetfulness. I need to correct that problem. Krishna is very kind. Let me stay fixed in that correct consciousness position. Krishna is very kind. Even while I got my pain in my knee. It's a good reminder. Krishna is very kind. Then it's not misery. It's a source of remembrance of Krishna. It's wonderful. More tomorrow. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.